floor.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. It's not a very often occasion that I get sent up here twice before you, once in the morning, once this afternoon, to introduce the second granddaughter that's going to be the page for this afternoon. And my granddaughter here, Shiloh Marion Underwood, is a sixth grader at Wyoming Indian Elementary School. She's 11 years old. She's active in 4-H. She's active as a volleyball player, a Lady Chiefs basketball player, and her traditional club, the White Hawk Dancers. Let's give her a round of applause. Welcome to the House. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce two friends of mine, Joe and Amy Madera, if they could stand up. Joe manages the Hilton in Jackson, the Homewood Suites, and Amy is our culinary arts instructor at the CWC branch. But more importantly, their kids aren't with them this weekend, so I asked them where the kids were, and they left them behind in Jackson. They said this is our second honeymoon. I said I would have picked something different than the Wyoming House for my second honeymoon, but we have our own deals.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I please have two privileges of the floor?
Certainly.
Please help me welcome from around the state in for the Wyoming Governor's Conference on Hospitality and Tourism, members of the hospitality and tourism industry. And everybody, please stand if you're in the... Please stand. And Mr. Speaker, also in the gallery is my favorite legislator, seven-term self-made businesswoman, member of the introductory class of the Wyoming Business Hall of Fame, former Big Wyo winner, and if I went on, we would never get to general files, so I'll just introduce Clarine Law.
Welcome to the House. Representative Kasparek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the south balcony are two friends from Gillette, Wyoming, who are part of the tourism group. We have Mary Silvernail and Keila Hodges.
Welcome to the House. Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Certainly.
I've got the pleasure to introduce two great friends from Cody, Wyoming. It's two number ones on your Wyoming license plate. Bob and Sandy Newsom, welcome to the House. Sandy's on the State Tourism Board, so please welcome them to the House.
Representative Blake.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Certainly.
In the south balcony up here, two people from Sweetwater County. First is Lisa and Selmy Dalton, representing the Tourism Board and the Holiday Inn in Rock Springs. And secondly is my neighbor, Alan Wilson, who's the Green River Parks and Recreation Director.
Welcome to the House. Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Certainly.
I have two folk from my district. One of them is in charge of tourism in Meteetse, and I'm looking around for her, Ms. Sherry Long. And also from the town of Thermopolis, we have Ms. Marianne Rush, and she is the new executive director of the Chamber of Commerce in Thermopolis. If you'd stand. There we are, right there. Thank you.
Representative Paxton.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Certainly.
For those of you who have never visited one of the hidden treasures of Wyoming, Encampment Wyoming, you've really missed out. And if you've been there and you haven't visited the Grand Encampment Museum, you've doubly missed out. And I would like to introduce at this time the director of the Grand Encampment Museum, Judy Stepp, right up over here.
Welcome to the House. Is there anybody who hasn't had privilege of the floor? With that order of business of reading and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 83.
Senate File 83 is introduced by Senator J.D. Anderson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to oil and gas.
Senate File 83 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 101.
Senate File 101 from Senator Von Flattern.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to motor vehicles.
Senate File 101 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 115.
Senate File 115 is introduced by Senator Driscoll.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish.
Senate File 115 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 82.
Senate File 82 from the Natural Resource Funding Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
Senate File Number 82 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. We're now at that order of business of reading of standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 63, Engrossed Sexual Assault Protection Orders, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Madden, Northrup, Petrop, and Simlick. Two no votes, Representative Laux and Nader, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 45, Game and Fish Department, General Fund Budget Request, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Halverson, Hutchings, Yagi, Crones, and Piperinen. One no vote, Representative Gay, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 16, Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Mader, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanager, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 18, Counties-Legal Publications, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Mader, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanager, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 19, Cities and Towns-Legal Publications, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Mader, Paxton, and Petroff. Dan Zwanager voted no, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 20, Local Governments-Legal Publications, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Mader, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanager, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
Brothers and sisters, before lunch, we didn't have committee announcements. If there are any committee announcements that are pressing, we are now at that order of business of committee announcements. Committee Number 12, Rules, will meet Tuesday, February 25, 2014, upon adjournment in Room 302 to take up the following bills. Senate File 67, Administrative Rules Streamlining. Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws, and such other rule changes as anybody proposes for the committee. We're at that order of business. Chairman Harvey.
Mr. Speaker, I apologize for not paying close attention, but did you say it was time to...
If you have committee announcements that need to be made before 3 o'clock, now is the time to make them. We're going to adopt that order of business of consideration of messages from the Senate.
Message number 161, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 24, Special Elections and Revisions, Ayes 30, No 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 162, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 25, Election Code-Revisions, Ayes 30, No 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message 163, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File number 31, 24-7 Sobriety Program, Ayes 30, No 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 165, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 53, Unfair Trade Practices, Ayes 30, No 0, sincerely Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 164, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, Senate File 34, Involuntary Hospitalization-Emergency Hearings, Ayes 28, Noes 2, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 166, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on the third reading by the vote indicated, Senate File 82, the 2014 Large Project Funding, Ayes 30, Noes 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 167, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, Senate File 83, Oil and Gas Operations-Bonding Requirement, Ayes 20, Noes 10, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 168, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 86, Obstructing Roads and Highways, Ayes 27, Noes 3, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 169, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 87, Public Records Preservation, Ayes 26, Noes 4, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 170, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on the third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 93, Agricultural Gas Tax Refund, Ayes 29, Noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 171, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 94, Game and Fish Resident Preference Points, Ayes 25, Noes 5, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 172, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications, Ayes 21, Noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 173, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicator, Ayes 26, Noes 4, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 174, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 107, Certificates of Insurance, Ayes 30, Noes 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 175, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, Senate File 115, Warrantless Searches, Repeal, Ayes 26, Noes 4, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 176, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File number 116, Expungement of Felonies, Ayes 29, Noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 179. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 89, Health Professionals-Medicaid Billing, Ayes 20, Noes 10, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 177. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 40, Involuntary Hospitalization and Treatment, Ayes 6, Noes 24, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 178. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, Katie's Law, Ayes 12, Noes 18, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Report that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House has resolved itself into committee of the whole. Representative Hutchings.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 15. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 15 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to community colleges, modifying community college major maintenance provisions, providing for uniformity in the calculations for major maintenance funding for community colleges, correcting references, authorizing rulemaking, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 15 engrossed, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 6 ayes, 1 excused, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harshman, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 15 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from Campbell County.
Representative Blickery.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate File 15 is a bill that was sponsored by the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee, worked on by all the individuals in that committee. And essentially it's a bill to modify the manner in which major maintenance is funded for community colleges to put it more in line with the way it's done for K-12. If you look on page 2 of your bill, you'll see that the State Building Commission is lined out to adopt a formula for major building. And it'll be based on gross square footage of the buildings. It includes only buildings providing education programs. It excludes student housing, student unions, and auxiliary service areas that are funded by the community colleges themselves through revenues that they generate. It uses a multiplier to maintain facilities in fair condition. Fair means better than average. As a way to explain how they do that, it's computed as the same way as in school facilities that you're aware of in K-12. It defines what major building and facility repair and replacement is, which means replacement of complete or major portions of a building and facility system at intervals. It's required to continue the use of the building in its original capacity for its original intended use, including compliance with the Americans for Disabilities Act. It's usually stuff that's done by contractors and professionals because it's work that would either demand all the time of the maintenance people at the affected colleges, or it's a level of sophistication that's higher than what they would be able to do. It's done within the general, in 2118-225, they define that the commission to the construction management program within the general services division will be where this is done. They'll forward recommendations to the capital construction projects and that sort of thing. Again, that later on it excludes student unions and that sort of stuff. The methodologies will require a 7-year phase-in period for new buildings for their major maintenance. And if you see on page 6, you'll see what percentage would be funded for major maintenance on new buildings. And there's some more, but essentially that's the bill. And what its purpose is just to define how it will be done and put it in line with K-12 funding, that type of thing. So I hope you'll support this bill.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do applaud the work of the Joint Appropriations Committee. This was quite a task to take on. And I was just curious if we could have a little more background on, I don't see anywhere in here where we're discussing allowable square footage. And so how do you deal with justifying all the square footage, I guess? That's my question, because I don't think we should begin the process of trying to make the determination of what's excess and what's not. But if you allow for major maintenance on every square inch of every building in all the community colleges, I think there could be some inequity as to how much funding districts get. You're going to disproportionately favor districts that have more square footage, which I understand if you've got it, you got to maintain it. But I just want to make sure that we're creating a system that's inherently fair.
Well, Madam Chairman,
Representative.
That's the same dichotomy that you've been addressing in K-12 now for a number of years back from the time when we started that. But the first way that we addressed doing that was by removing the facilities that make money, like student housing and cafeterias and student unions and that sort of thing. And essentially, I think the rest of it is something that will have to be ongoing work to be able to define that.
Further discussion, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on page 5, and Chairman Education's correct, and we talked about this a little bit in our budget amendments, there's no such thing as allowable square footage in the community colleges. But I would say the system we have had has been all over. It's basically written on every budget decision. Some of these buildings we've included, some we've specifically said excluded to try to hold costs down over the years. So it's been all over the place. So this brings it all in. But on page 5, on line 8, it talks about those programs that have to be part of the college's strategic plan. And so that has to go through the commission. It has some oversight as well. And then also the good representative from Campbell County on line 13 talked about those places that are paid for with enterprise funds, and so they'll go into, like, in these new buildings, when we were all went through the system, you know, you'd have one building where everybody ate, and this building that was a student union, and this. Now these buildings are starting, there's kind of food service in all these new buildings, and so they actually go in and say this square footage is enterprise area, we won't count that in the calculation. So really, that's my best answer. There is no allowable square footage, but it has to be part of the strategic plan, and A&I then can develop rules. They get a look at it. It's not just a throw all your square footage in there and we automatically take it. There's some give and take with A&I and state construction.
Representative Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One more question for the Joint Appropriations Chairman. My question has to do with what did the scenarios look like when you run these computations in the same manner that we do as for school facilities. Did the Joint Appropriations Committee look at how many dollars and cents we're talking about, and how does that differ from, and I realize we've funded this in a hodgepodge of different ways over the past. I'm glad to see that we're working towards creating some formula. When you start creating a formula out of, you know, from nothing, I'm curious if they ran the numbers to see how many millions of dollars per biennium we're going to be talking about.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And we actually did. We looked at scenarios from funding from what's called a 1% to 1.25, 1.5, all the way up to a 2% calculation. And we settled in on the 1.5, which is, as a good representative from Campbell County talked about, needed to keep the assets in fair condition. And that's kind of in the middle. There's two above that, and I think there's two below that. It's kind of keeping those in the middle. And that amount at universities and community colleges is $26 million per biennium. Now, if we'd have went up to the 2% to move them all up into that more excellent categories, that's about $35 million per biennium. And the 1.25 amount's about 21. So it's like a lot of things we do. It's the old Goldilocks thing. It's not too cold, it's not too hot, but we're trying to find where it's just right, and we settle on what we think is reasonable somewhere in the middle.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and this will be my last question. I realize this bill deals only with major maintenance. When we get into situations where we're looking at going through the process of possibly scoring some of these buildings, we're not going to get into the process of that, are we?
Chairman Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I looked at the wrong line, actually, and that number is $13.5 million per biennium. That was the university number I gave you, the 26 at that same 1.5. So it's 13.5, my mistake, up to a high of 18, down to a low of about 11. So we're kind of in the middle. As far as scoring, all our buildings now in the state, we use the RS Means system, which is a nationally recognized system, and they go in, they do actually rate the systems, and major maintenance are usually done by contractors. They're bigger than what your, you know, in-house maintenance guy can do. These are usually big systems that are either involve, you know, the HVAC, the envelope of the building, those kind of things, major overhauls. So they are, in fact, rated and given assignments to keep that in that fair condition. But as far as rating buildings for replacement or those kind of things, no. This is all about keeping these buildings at a fair condition, not great or good or X. I don't even know the terms now. They escape me, but it's keeping them somewhere in the middle.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Thank you. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 15 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose, no. Senate File 15 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 26. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 26 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the University of Wyoming Endowment Challenge Program, clarifying that the corpus derived from the state matching funds is inviolate and limiting expenditures from the corpus as specified, requiring a report and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 26 engrossed, Endowment Challenge Program, State Funds and Violate, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Gingrey, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 26 do pass. There are no amendments on it. Let me explain it real quick. So this was assigned to Judiciary to work on over the interim. So this is a committee-sponsored bill. It was a footnote to the budget bill, and the footnote essentially said that the Appropriations Committee and then ultimately the whole legislature had concerns with how the matching program was working at the University of Wyoming in regards to the foundation at the university. So we spent multiple meetings, meeting with the university trustees, meeting with the foundation trustees, and we came up with two bills. You'll see this bill, and then there's a bill right after this one we'll be dealing with. Essentially what the issue was, when we created the matching grant program, not everyone had thought through the whole process, all the little details. One of the things that was part of it was that the money, as it gets matched, so they raise their private donations. As soon as they have their private donations, and they tell the state treasurer transfers the state money over to the University of Wyoming. University of Wyoming is a state agency, so everything's fine up to that point. But what the state agency, the University of Wyoming, then does is they contract with a private corporation. That private corporation is the UW Foundation. That's the part everyone had a little issue with because the Constitution of Wyoming had some issues with that. So we spent a lot of time talking about the constitutional issues of having the UW Foundation managing the money. We think we have resolved most of those. What this bill does is it makes clear, number one, that the expenditures being made out of there have to follow the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. There was some question as to what standard they were operating under, and so that we're making that clear that they're going to use that. The foundation is good with that. The trustees are good with that. We also put in there what do they do with the earnings off of the investment. So essentially we're handing over state funds to the foundation. They invest it. They make money off of it. What can they do with the money? So we made that clear, that they can spend the money off of the endowments, but we define what that meant. And so if you look on page 3, it defines what earnings from the investment of state matching funds actually means. And what it means is it's the money over, when you take the total, meaning the state and then the private, and you put the two together, the amount over that amount, then they can spend that. And what I mean by spend it, they can either put it back into the funds so you have more money, or they can spend it on some other things. Lastly, what we did was, and then the Senate added this on their side when it came over, this Section 2 part, they're not telling them they have to do it, but it's suggesting that they create a stabilization reserve account, and it looks like the UW trustees will look into doing that. It would be similar to our reserve account that we use with the PMTF, that 5% one. It would be similar to that. So hopefully that will resolve some of these UW Foundation issues.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Majority Floor Leader Brown?
Madam Chairman, thank you. Two questions. Number one, we say that expenditures attributable to endowment gifts may be expended in accordance with the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. My question is this. If the University Foundation financial pool as a whole is underwater, does that mean our funds are underwater and no expenditures can be made? And my second question is, what is the meaning of reasonable cost of administration? Is that the cost of management of the funds? Is that administration of the a foundation endowment program as a whole? Or just exactly what is the meaning of that term?
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Maybe the others, the sponsor, were not limited on time in the general committee would be more appropriate to voice his thoughts. But mine is a question. The question is, on line 5, on page 2, we have the statement that the university shall immediately transfer all matching funds received to the university foundation to be permanently invested. And then we turn around on the new language on page 3, line 2, and we define something that's a little bit unusual. and that is, it states, has used in this section earnings from the investment of state matching funds means the amount of net appreciation realized and unrealized in the fair value of the asset and the endowment. If we're going to do put realized and unrealized, so that may be capital gains and that, if we're going to do that, when is the determination for realized and unrealized going to be calculated? We're going a little bit further than is normal in the handling of permanent funds than usual. It would seem to me that if we're going to do something like this, we ought to state the date and time that, in particular, the unrealized gains may be evaluated and used to be dispersed. Appreciate an answer to that. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
There was a question about when you make the determination. The second bill you're going to see actually defines that. They probably should have been combined. When we were working them, they ended up being two separate bills. But in that second bill, it says it's at the end, it's the last day of every quarter is the day you do it. On the one question, I can't remember what the majority floor leader's questions were. Yeah, what was your second question? Oh, his other question was, what's the reasonable cost of administration? So we had a long discussion about this, and this is where the second bill will come into play, too. So what we found out, they had been charging, meaning the UW Foundation had been charging University of Wyoming 1% to manage the money. Then about a year ago, they voted to change that from 1% to 1.25%. So we started asking why. Well, why did you go up a whole quarter? Because you've got to remember, that doesn't sound like a lot, but this is a lot of money. So when you do a quarter, suddenly a huge chunk of money flows into the UW Foundation. And our argument was in committee that you can charge us for the management of the money, because you have to pay money managers and stuff. That's fine. That's what you should be using that for. But then they turned around and they said, well, actually what we're using a lot of that money for is that's what we pay our employees, and that's how we're operating. Not managing your money, but there are other operations, meaning hiring someone to go out and get more donations, you know, so someone like that. We had a little concerns with that. We weren't sure if we were real comfortable with that. So that's why in the second bill you'll see we sort of have put in a control on how much of a rate they can charge. It has to always come back in front of the legislature. The last question on the MIFA and how that works, I don't remember us discussing that, and I don't have a good answer for that.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think most of us do understand that the fee, as the way it is calculated, may be calculated and determined on a quarterly basis. But if that were to follow, it would be illogical to assume that the unearned capital gains or the unearned gain of the fund would also be calculated and distributed on the basis of a quarterly basis. So maybe a friendly amendment or maybe a friendly conversation and come up with the second bill can address that. But as it stands, it's pretty irregular for the language that's on that page 3, line 1, 2, and 3.
Is there any other question? Discussion on the bill, excuse me. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 26 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the University of Wyoming Endowment Challenge Program, specifying limits on expenditures for costs of administration and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 27 engrossed, the Endowment Challenge Program fees, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes and 0 noes, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Gingrey, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise, report it to so with recommendation Senate File 27 do pass. This one's a little bit easier for me. This one's the one I was talking about. All this one's doing is they're set at the 1%, but if they want to go up, so let's say they want to go to the 1.25, they got to come through the budget process, and they would come in front of, go through appropriations and then come to the through the budget bill to increase it by a quarter, if they or whatever amount they wanted to increase it to. And you'll see there on page 2 at some of the questions the good representative from Sheridan was asking about when those time periods are. It's on the last day of every preceding quarter, and that's about what everything the bill does.
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question would be, was there any discussion about this cost of administration and what it's actually spent for and whether we ever see an itemized account? And also, it's my understanding that on their money management, they pay money management fees that are outside of this, that this is money management fees are not, because I've made the argument for a long time, you could go to one of the major fund companies and they'd manage this money for maybe something in the order of 0.19, and this group wants 1.0, and we're really trying to go to 1.25, because hidden in there or unexplained in there are salaries and whatever else they do with all that money. And I wondered if the committee really had a deep discussion with them about being more transparent about what that money's being spent for.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, that's a lot of what we discussed. We spent a lot of time on that. The foundation was very upfront that they use a lot of that money for basically their operations. Our argument was we weren't real comfortable with that idea. But we didn't want to go backwards because they're already at the 1%. So what we put into the bill, because there was a lot of give and take here, on page 3, line 4, what we wrote in is upon the modification of any cost of administration to an amount above 1%. So if they come in and are able to get it above the 1, then they have to report back to us a detailed financial accounting of all their costs of what they're spending it on. Not below the 1, only if they go above the 1, then they have to bring it in. Their argument back was that they shouldn't have to give us the financial accounting because we'd already agreed to the 1. You know, whichever way you go with that, you could possibly do an amendment on that one. Again, it was a really delicate balance because what you're trying to do is to fix this problem that we probably should have fixed when we originally did the original program without upsetting the private donors. You got to remember, a lot of people have already put in millions of dollars. So you don't want to tinker too much with this program because people have already committed to it.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose, no. Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 50. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 50 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to the State Miners Hospital Board and Account, modifying board membership requirements, modifying benefit eligibility requirements, specifying that benefits from the Miners Hospital Account shall be paid only after other available benefits for covered conditions, modifying and providing definitions, repealing obsolete provision, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate 50 engrossed state minors' health coverage, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 7 aye votes, 0 no votes, signed by Representative Moniz, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harshman, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 50 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from Carbon County.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate file 50 is somewhat of a cleanup bill and a really good bill on the Miners Hospital and Miners Health coverage. There's no more Miners Hospital. Just to refresh the body's memory, in the act of admission, the state was given 30,000 acres to fund a Miners Hospital, which since then has become the Miners Hospital Board or the Miners Health Board. And one important thing it says, for miners who shall become disabled or capacitated to labor while working in the mines of the state. What this bill does is changes some of the current things going on with the board and the coverage for miners. And it makes some changes which really need to be made from somewhat of a constitutional standpoint. The first thing it does is it sets out requirements for obtaining the benefits. Mainly, you have to be domiciled in Wyoming on the date of your application. You can't claim residency anywhere else. You have to have be a resident of Wyoming at the time of the reception of benefits. Have to prove your who you are and where you live by some form of ID. It also modifies the Miners Hospital Board and changes who may belong to that. The board originated in Sweetwater County, has since moved to Campbell County, but this requires that both of those counties, which have the majority of the mines in the state, provide members to those boards for the board. Okay. It also requires information be provided to the Joint Appropriations Committee on the activities and how to make payments, that the payments made out of the funds of the board are payment of last resort after workers' comp and other insurance may make payments. It also adds coal and other geological materials that are mined, because the act of admission was not specific. It just said miners, and to make sure that all miners are covered. It also goes further to define minor as a current resident of Wyoming and that who have labored or provided services in a mine or qualifying process facility. The crusher at the mine is what they're talking about. And that includes both people who are employed by the mine and people who worked in the mine for a contractor. Many of the mines use contract services for topsoil removal or crushing or any number of things. And that further defines it, and then goes on to define what domicile means. We've discussed this on numerous other bills of what resident or residence means, and this provides that you're domicile in Wyoming, and that means physically living here, you make your permanent home here, you're not a temporary person living here, and those sort of things. And defines resident meaning United States citizen or legal alien. These are cleanup provisions which are really needed. There was some abuse in the system. This helps eliminate some of that abuse and provide a little more definition. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Filer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question. Page 5, line 6, under the definition of minor, it says, means a current resident of Wyoming who has worked in a mine or a state continuous to the state. With the word current, does that mean once somebody works in the mine for however many years and retires and they move, that they're no longer covered? Is that the intent of current resident?
Representative Burkhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, it means they are currently a resident of Wyoming.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Another question. You know, we've got situations in around the border of our state, and I would say up in the northeast corner, there is a small grouping of bentonite mines, but there's a few of the people live in one of the communities up there, but most of the people live in the state to the east of us. And so they actually work in the mine. They're in the mine. Do they not? Are they not eligible for the hearing and vision screenings that the Miners' Hospital comes around and performs at those mines? We also have coal miners that live just over the Bighorn Mountains from me and work in a coal mine just over the Montana border. So we've got current residents, but the mine is not in the state. And on the other side, we have miners who are not current residents of the state, but they actually make their living in the state. So how does this fit with that bill?
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That's why the term residence and domicile were defined in this bill. There was some abuse to that, and it's to protect and provide for the miners working here in Wyoming who stay here. It's interesting to note that when the Miners Hospital Board started requiring identification to get these benefits, that the number of applicants dropped considerably. So there was some abuse. This helps clean up that abuse, make sure the money is used here in the state for those people who live in the state.
Speaker Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As a former miner who's about to vote himself out of benefits if he votes, I just need to declare a conflict of interest.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, I just have a couple of questions, and one I don't know that it was asked previously, and I don't know that I quite got my head around it. So if a miner spent his career 30 years in the state working in one of the state's mines, and at the conclusion upon his retirement or some years after his retirement, he elected to head to warmer weather, that person, after spending his life in Wyoming's mines, would then no longer qualify for benefits under the Miners Hospital is one, if I'm understanding that correctly. And the second question is, and I believe that it spells this out, that the mine can be in another state, a contiguous state to the state of Wyoming. The mine could be across state lines, but the miner has to be a resident of the state. And then my third question for the good presenter is if he could help define what the definition of other geological materials might be. Just give me an example of that, if you would, please. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The first question involves if someone moves out of state. Part of this is a constitutional issue for the state. This was in the act of admission, and it was for a miner's hospital, which was to benefit people living in Wyoming. Over time, that changed somewhat in that the hospital, in effect, ceased to exist as a miner's hospital, and instead the board was established. Going back to the constitutional issues, the same thing applies, though, that they be here and receive services here in Wyoming rather than going anywhere they want. This was to apply to people here in Wyoming. And I think if you think back in your history, in 1890, mining was a terrible profession and was probably about the only industry that Wyoming had. Right now, mining is one of the safest industries we have in the state, and it's to protect the funds from those who would not follow the rules. And as I said, this goes back to the act of admission, and we have to follow those unless we go to Congress and change it. The other geological materials would be bentonite, aggregates that are mined, uranium. It does cover in situ processing, and those things we normally think of extracting materials from the ground.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Reading from the blue copy, the 89.E1, I change it going to page 4 and line 19. What we are saying there, what the bill proposes to say, is the board shall reduce any benefit which would be provided under this section by all other public and private sources which are available to the minor for disability or condition. I question whether we have the prerogative of saying that a minor that had bought an accidental death and dismemberment type of a policy prior to being employed now then is going to forfeit the provisions of that which may be paid independently of any other source or any other cause other than the disability itself. Are you sure that you want to try to venture into that?
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That section does make it the payer of last resort. That protects the funds that are in the account. And these funds are dedicated to certain specific things. Hearing aids, for example. Workers' compensation only pays so much for hearing aids. And say to get a really good one, if that's your desire, they can cost a lot more than workers' compensation will pay. So this will come in as second payer to make up that difference. The same with certain glasses and that sort of thing. So it's payer of last resort. We have no private workers' compensation coverage in Wyoming.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, sticking with that payer of last resort, what is actually the proposed savings of becoming the payer of last resort? How much are we actually gaining in the fund? Thank you.
Representative Barlow, Burkhart.
We don't really gain in the fund. We leave the money in the corpus. The way the accounts are set up, they can use the income fund each year, which works out to be somewhere around 5% of, I believe it's $91 million in the accounts. So they can use somewhere around $5 million. And it does add up. They do hearing aids. They do screening for certain illnesses or injuries from the mine, glasses and some other things, back injuries if they can prove they occurred in the mine.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you. Just to add a little history to this, too, you know, it used to be this program, of course, which is funded out of the Permanent Land Fund, this was so wrought with corruption that really if you drove a soda truck in and loaded the pop machines in a mining facility somewhere, you somehow qualified for benefits. I mean, it was getting, it was really getting abused. And we really have a good board and folks who have worked hard to kind of rein all this in. And so we're at the point now where I think we've got a program that's really going to serve the folks who actually mine in the state and really take care of folks and not, because we're in real danger of depleting the fund. And so and appreciate all the good questions and debate, but boy, this thing has come a long ways from where it was just a few years ago, and so we appreciate your support.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Burkhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate Fall 50 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate Fall 50 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Fall 54. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Fall 54 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to reports to the legislature, modifying reporting requirements, codifying certain reporting requirements, repealing certain reporting requirements, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 54, reports to the legislature and respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 6 ayes, 1 excused, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harshman, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, I do so at the recommendation that House Bill or Senate File 54 do pass and turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from the capital city.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Senate File 54 is the bill that tells what committees or whether or not the whole legislature will receive reports. And that first one, the Hathaway Scholarship Program reporting, is a report on scholarship funds controlled by the institution. And the report will describe the extent of which the university community colleges have included within written or electronic communications transmitted to alumni of the institution, and information on the progress of the scholarship programs. And the next section on page 3 is the agency enterprise revenues, and it asks that each agency maintain an account within the agency's enterprise fund shall include a report in the agency's biennial budget. And then the next one was state budget distribution of copies to legislators. And this one is saying that the governor is going to distribute to each legislator electronic or upon request a printed copy of the state budget. So for those of you that like to have a printed copy of the state budget, you're going to have to request that in the future. The next one is on the requirements for budget requests and the format and contents of the report. And that one is also if you want electronic or printed copies. And the next one is from the CIO's office. The quality management model report will include training and insurances for data privacy protection and use throughout the agency, and shall track customer feedback on technology services oversight. The department shall involve the agencies in assessment of needs, successes, and areas of improvement, and shall produce customer satisfaction and performance reports. The department shall also list any federal programs being implemented by the department. Going over to page 6, distribution and use of funds accounts for cities and towns benefited. And that will contain all monies received by the state from its sale of production from federal mineral leases subject to those federal acts. And the first $200 million of revenue received in any fiscal year shall be distributed by the state treasurer as provided by this subsection. 1% of those revenues shall be credited to the general fund. And 6.75% into a separate account for the University of Wyoming. Page 8. Film Industry Financial Incentive Program, and that report will include a return to the state funds expended pursuant to that article. On the bottom of page 8, Energy Impacted the County Roads Program account, a report of the grants awarded and the progress of that program created under this act, admission charges and other revenue, and that's the Department of Ag. They may receive money or property of any kind, chartered, donated, granted, or bequeathed for activities of the state fair. The reporting requirements go into page 10. This is telling what agency to report to which committee. In this case, it's Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services Interim Committee. Then on the middle of page 10, the Guardian Ad Litem Program and the Public Defender's Office. The report to include a number of cases and the amount of funds expended for reimbursements and the amounts of matching monies. And the county attorney in any county not participating in the program shall submit a report containing the same information for the county to the JAC. The top of page 11, Wyoming Military Assistance Trust Fund Annual Report. It'll include the department's biennial budget submitted under this statute, the total amount in interest income in the trust fund. And then the reporting will include a report of the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. That's on the bottom of page 11. And the report of the status of the program and its graduates. The middle of page 12, fee, tuition, and fees for education, war, orphans, and veterans definition. The Community College Commission shall include within its biennial budget request a report identifying the actions taken and monies expended pursuant to this act. Bottom of page 12, payment of institutions of higher education. The program administrator shall deposit payments received under this article into the account within the University of Wyoming's permanent endowment fund and shall be invested in the program's administrator for the manner provided for investment of other than the University of Wyoming funds. Bottom of page 13, powers and duties, rules and regulations, identifying statutes, rules, regulations which inhibit implementation of programs under this act. And then top of page 14, specialty plates, Pearl Harbor Survivor National Guard members, Armed Forces Veterans, Purple Heart recipients, Department of Transportation shall include in their report identifying the actions taken and monies expended to pursuant to this section. And the same for the Gold Star license plate, which is in the middle of page 14, the Cancer Control Plan on the top of page 15. That program needs to report to us the conclusions and goals of the next 2 years under this act to the Joint Labor Health and Services Interim Social Service Interim Committee. Middle of page 15, permits for the use of state parks, recreation areas, and other historical sites. That report has to offer for sale of permits and allow of use at state parks and recreational areas and historical sites. And there's also where the department may establish a voluntary pay station and at which parks those are allowed, for the contributions to be made at what pay stations those are, for the overnight camping permits, and then underneath that, which parks those are allowed at. And then there's an exception for the lifetime permit right there on line 9. The funds collected, where they're deposited, and what they're for on page 16 in the middle. Page 17, that's the ADRC. It's concerning the implementation of the ADRC, the dollar value of local contributors, and the cost avoidance for that section. And then section 3, bottom of page 17, which reports are repealed. And I'll stand for questions.
Representative Simlock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to the first section in the bill under the Hathaway Scholarship Program reporting. It appears to me like most of the reporting really has to do with kind of the fiduciary aspect, financial aspect of the program. When we get down on line 9 on page 2, there's some language there that says information on the progress of the scholarship program established under this article. And I'm not sure the bill presenter would have that information with that detail at this time, but I was interested to know what was contemplated with that information, because I would have an idea of what I would believe would be some appropriate information that might be included in the Hathaway program. It's not really financial, but I didn't know if that was... If I knew what that was, that would guide me as to perhaps if I could clarify that on a second reading amendment. So that would be my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I believe it's scorers, probably the high school courses that person that received the three levels of the Hathaway Scholarship, and probably besides ATC scorers, grade point averages.
Chairman Simlock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that information. I guess my final question on this topic would be, is there... some information someplace that would direct the Hathaway program as to what the detail of this information might be, and that that we could look at that might prompt some other amendments down the road.
Representative Escobar.
Madam Chairman, I would have to actually look at that report to get back to the good Chairman of Agriculture to answer that question.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, he did so with a recommendation that Senate File 54 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those who oppose, no. Senate File 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 70. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 70 from the Management Audit Committee. An act relating to administration of government, specifying appropriated funds or authorizations which may be carried into a subsequent fiscal biennium, specifying process, imposing reporting requirements, defining terms, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 70 engrossed, State Appropriations, Lapsing of Funds, reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 7 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harshman, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I do so that with the recommendation that Senate File 70 do pass, and turn the explanation of this bill over to the Chairman of the Management Audit Committee, the good representative from Fremont County.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your Management Audit Committee brings you Senate File 70. This is a result out of the B11 study we did over the last interim, and we identified some issues in this process. For example, in 2011, the B11 audit identified $438 million in funds that were carried forward and didn't revert back according to the revision statutes. What this bill does is go in there and allow funds to be continue to be held if there's a legitimate reason for it. Those reasons have to be an outstanding obligation for these funds to remain there because a contract's been signed. Possibly goods or services have actually been delivered, but they haven't been invoiced yet. Salaries were earned and payable, but they haven't been paid yet. Written agreement for a grant, loan, or award that was signed, but the funds were not distributed during that biennium. A written offer to provide grant, loan, or award to distribute funds based on execution of a legally binding agreement. So there are reasons to hold the funds over. And those are the legally binding reasons. The funds can't be held over because the department didn't get around to expending the funds. They have to revert back. Going to the bill, pretty much page 1, 2, and down to line 18 on page 3 defines what is legally incurred. So these are the reasons why that particular department can keep those funds available to pay the bills where they're obligated to pay. The next section, unexpended, unobligated funds to lapse or be carried over, duty of auditor, it's a reporting requirement. And this reporting requirement will occur in the even-numbered years. The funds... are required that the Department of Audit is required to report by July 15th in the even-numbered years. Not later than September 15th, each agency shall provide to the auditor the nature of each outstanding obligation, the authority to maintain any unexpended appropriations. Not later than October 1st, the auditor shall revert any unexpended appropriation for which the appropriation or authorization was mistakenly carried forward. And then by October 1st also, they'll report back to the governor and the Joint Appropriations Committee the type of funds that are going to be reverting. An exception, E on page 7. There sometimes are some expenditures that are still unspent, but there might be something in statute, codified in statute, that require those funds to be available for a period of time for whatever reason. Those funds won't be subject to reversion. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I forgot to ask you this earlier, but we've got, I'm anticipating Senate File 71 coming up, and it's got conflicting language with one part of it, which is 94207 D, and that's on page 4 of House Bill 70. And we're going to be looking at another management audit bill that's got 94207D also, but they don't word alike. They're in conflict with one another, and I wondered if we've got a resolution. How do you handle that kind of thing? Is it something we can let this run, number 70, run through, and then I guess what I was thinking is they would run together so we could mirror them and make sure that they don't conflict. But if we do it today, we do number 70, and then tomorrow, the next day, we do 71. Is it going to be too late to change 70 then? See what I mean?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There was a discussion on that. Hopefully, management audit staff will have an amendment to hopefully resolve any conflicts between this and a bill coming in a day or two. So we still have second and third reading to bring an amendment.
Chairman Madden, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment on this bill. Just wanted to remind you of that.
Thank you, thank you, Madam Chairman. Did you want me to take that now and I can explain it?
Sure, sir. You can go ahead and move that.
Madam Chairman, I forgot about this amendment that was coming up, and I refer you to 70, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I would move that amendment and explain it to you. If you look on page 7, line 5, wait a minute. Yeah. After line 5, insert, the state auditor, in consultation with the Department of Information and Administration Information, shall accommodate the Department of Transportation's October through September fiscal period in implementing the reporting requirements of WS-4207, and that's earlier in this bill, and it refers to the July or the regular fiscal year. And one of the people from YDOT got a hold of me and said we need to put that in so that they don't hold YDOT to that fiscal year. As you know, YDOT's fiscal year starts in October because of the federal government funding is dominant in YDOT. So that's the explanation for it, I don't think there's any problem with it. It was ran by the LSO and they said it was fine, but I'll try to answer any questions further on it, but that's all they wanted.
Representative Miller, we're still on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
That's a friendly amendment.
All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
No. Who oppose? The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Bill number 70, Senate File 70, do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose, no. Senate File 70 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 9 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, eliminating authority of probation and parole agents to make arrests, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 9, probation and parole agent arrest authority, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 aye votes, 0 no votes, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Gingrey, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 9 do pass. This is a real easy fix. Probation and parole agents, they go to the homes of their probationers or parolees. They inspect the homes, things like that, to make sure they haven't been drinking, things like that. If they find that the person is in violation, then they call a sheriff deputy or a city police officer who comes and does the arrest. This has been the procedure for quite a few, more than 10 years. For whatever reason, the DOC was going through and cleaning up their statutes and recognized that the statute still said that they make the arrests and they don't actually do that. So all this is doing is saying that they request a peace officer to arrest. So just 3 words are getting added.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 9 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those who oppose, no. Senate File 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 29 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, requiring findings for supervisor probation of misdemeanors, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 29, supervised probation of misdemeanors, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 8 ayes, 1 no, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Gingrey, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 29 do pass. So here is the situation that we have. You have supervised probation, of course, always for a felony. In many cases, they actually go to prison, and then they're parolee. And just educationally wise, a parolee is someone who has been released from prison, and then they're on parole for a period of time. A probationer is someone who never went to prison, and they were just placed on probation. There are 2 different types of probation. There is supervised probation, and there is unsupervised probation. Supervised probation means they're coming to your house on a daily basis, coming in, no knock, inspecting everything, having you do drug tests, those types of things. Unsupervised means usually the conditions are things like don't have further run-ins with the law, and if they do, then they know to bring that person back in. That's really easy to understand on the felony side. On the misdemeanor side, and again, felonies are anything over a year is a felony where you're being imprisoned. Anything under a year is a misdemeanor. So misdemeanors are your smaller crimes. Normally, you don't do supervised probation with a misdemeanant. You have unsupervised probation, meaning you have a list of things that they're supposed to do, and if they don't do them, like community service, things like that, then you bring them in. There are some communities that like to use supervised probation and to use the DOC to do it. The DOC does not have the manpower to do that. We can certainly move toward it if you wanted to. We'd have to increase their amount of employees by quite a lot. So DOC came in during the interim. This was a committee-sponsored bill, and they said, in particular, there was like 2 or 3 judges, one in particular, that every time they had a misdemeanor, the judge would say supervised probation. That causes an extreme strain on those probation and parole officers, because what they should be spending their times is on the felons and on the more serious cases, and instead they were spending a lot of times doing supervised probation on smaller crimes that don't need it. We didn't want to tell judges they couldn't do supervised probation on misdemeanors, so the compromise we came up with that we thought was pretty good, we said the court shall not request supervised probation for a misdemeanor offense unless the court makes findings showing a particular need for supervision of the offender. What that means is each time a judge orders supervised probation for a misdemeanor, he has to, or she has to enter that into the order why they're doing that. And it'll be very, so it's not like saying you can't do it. It's just saying, if you're going to do it, give us the good reason in your order why you're doing it. And so they could, put it in there. I talked to this defendant. I think we really need to have supervised probation on him. So it would allow it. What we're hoping to do is that by putting that in there, it will remind judges to not use it as liberally as they have been using it, so that we don't have to hire more DOC employees.
Jordy Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick question. So it sort of sounds like we're passing this whole legislation based on the activities of just a couple judges. And it makes me wonder, is there anything in here in this language that would keep a judge from, coming up with some boilerplate justification, plugging it into every order, and you end up with the same problem, just with longer orders? And if they're wondering if that was a discussion, and if I'm not sure there's any way around it, but just if you could address that a little bit.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excellent question. We did have that discussion. I mean, we certainly can go to the good gentleman's community that we just spoke and have a discussion with one of their judges. We thought this was a good compromise. It is really putting a burden on DOC in those particular communities. DOC really doesn't have the power to go sit down with a judge and say, "Judge, you got to stop doing this." Judges usually don't like it when people tell them what to do. So what we tried to do here was come up with a good compromise, and we think we accomplished that.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor. Whoa. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sorry to be a little late at the trigger there.
No problem.
A question. What if I'm wondering about the separation of powers, and I'm wondering what would happen if a judge just said, that's an unwarranted meddling in another branch of government, and I'm going to enter whatever order I think is appropriate for the situation without regard to the statute.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another excellent question. We had that discussion, too. We think we actually have the power over this because we control the DOC. Those are our employees. What this bill is really dealing with is, do we want to spend millions of dollars to hire more employees at the DOC? I don't think we do. That's the part where we come in, because we have the purse strings and we control the DOC aspect. And that was the concern, is that we certainly could have written this, I think, to say misdemeanors, there can be no supervised probation for misdemeanors. And I think we have the power to do that. Where we can't get into areas is procedure. But substantive law, we certainly can. But procedural law, the good majority floor leader is correct. We have to be very careful to not interfere with the judicial branch.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 29 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 103. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 103 from the Management Council, an act relating to administration of government, providing for the rehabilitation and restoration of the Capitol building and the remodeling and construction of other state properties, codifying and continuing a task force specifying process and duties relating to specified capital construction projects, providing for reports, transferring expended appropriations, and making other appropriations, providing for the interfund borrowing and repayment of borrowed funds, amending, conforming, or repealing related provisions, authorizing positions, and providing for an effective date. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 103 engrossed, State Buildings Construction, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 7 aye votes, 0 no votes, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harshman, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 103 do pass, and I turn the explanation over to the good representative from Cheyenne.
Good representative from Cheyenne? Is that
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are making history. Senate File 103 is the bill brought to you by the Management Council that I'll present for the renovation and remodel of the Capitol, the Herschler, and the tunnel in between. Walking you through, you should have all received last week a frequently asked question document, which I won't hold up as a prop, that answers the 50 most asked questions on the building. But if you have one that's not included in there, please let me know. Walking you through Senate File 103. Basically, on page 2 is where it starts. 95110, we are putting existing definitions of law. The advisory task force is the same task force that has been meeting over the last year. The oversight group, which we create in 95111, is a group made up of 4 members of the House, 4 members of the Senate, and the governor. These 8 people have oversight over the project's major decisions as we move forward, and the governor still has the veto authority as the chief elected officer of the state, the executive branch, to veto anything the oversight group decides. Otherwise, the president of the Senate, majority and minority leaders, the speaker of the House, and majority and minority leaders, with one additional member from each body, sit on this oversight group that must approve all funding before moving forward. There on page 4, you'll see the oversight group continues in existence until 2019, and then the crux of the bill starts on page 495.112. This is where we proceed with level 3 funding. This body has authorized level 1 and level 2 funding over the last 2 years. This basically just says we're going forward. The layout, if you haven't seen it, of the proposed design of the Herschler and the tunnel in the Capitol is outside the majority floor leader's office, along with all 3 books on the project, which I also have here behind me. But if you haven't seen the model yet, it's outside the majority floor leader's office. And I'd be happy to answer questions on that. So, basically, the project moves forward to level 3, as well as construction and management. There on page 5, there are 6 different facets to this project, the first being the Capitol Building Restoration and Rehabilitation, the second being the Herschler State Office Building, the third being temporary space accommodations, which we may need. We have put $2 million into the budget in case we do need to use other state-owned buildings or other leased space as these moves are going on. Romanet 4 is the restoration and rehab and renovation of the Herschler building after the remodel of the Capitol has taken place. Romanet 5 is furniture, fixtures, and equipment. This covers everything. We want this in one big package so we don't ever come back to the legislature for more money. And then 6 on the next page are contingency costs. We have put $20 million in contingency. Should something happen, we discover flaws with the building as we move forward. There in Section B on page 6, we basically are setting out the needs of the building and who comes first within it. The legislative need comes first, followed by the governor's office, followed by security. After those allocations are made and decided in April through June this year, the Oversight Committee and the Advisory Committee will jointly come up with space contingencies for the next elected officials. Certainly, as we decide the need of the legislature first, committee rooms are our major priority. They can't all fit within this building due to structural requirements, and so you'll see the allowance on page 6 that committee chairman and legislative committee rooms and associated staff can be in the structure connecting the Capitol building to the Herschler and what we refer to as the tunnel right now, which will be expanded. If there are space in excess of the needs of the legislature, the governor's office, and security, the oversight group and advisory task force will consult and delineate the offices there on page 7 with the Secretary of State first, then the State Auditor, State Treasurer, and Superintendent of Public Instruction. We therefore provided, if there is not enough room in this Capitol building, which we do not think there will be, the Herschler State Office building to the north will be used for those elected offices. Basically, we've checked up what we refer to as the St. Mary site, the Pioneer site, and after 6 to 7 months of meeting, sometimes weekly, we really do believe this is the full plan moving forward that best suits the needs of the state. On page 7, we also, the department in consultation with the task force, provides alternatives for temporary location of elected officials and the legislative functions over the next 2 years while we are out of the building. Page 8, we have a protection on change orders. Basically, if any change order comes in over $100,000 or all the change orders come in over $1 million, that has to go before the oversight group for approval. On page 9 of the bill, this is our design and construction execution. Basically, we leave it up to the construction management division to be the primary fiscal and contracting agent and proceed with level 3 under their direction and within accordance of the authority of the governor. Basically, the department, the construction management division, will consult with the advisory task force on all things as this project moves forward. On page 10, we are just redelineating space in the Capitol. You'll see right now in statute, the Attorney General is required to have an office in this building. We are placing the Attorney General requiring to have an office in the Capitol City, but not necessarily in the State Capitol building. Again, on 95101, the State Building Commission, we're just mandating they comply with this process as this moves through the process over the next 2 years. Page 11, 95109, this is the advisory task force. It just puts in the statute the same task force we have in now. And you'll see this was a budget amendment we had last year. We're just putting in the statute. It requires this advisory task force to be made up of 3 members of the Senate, 3 members of the House, 5 of the statewide elected officials' deputies, 2 members of the public, 1 staff member from ANI Construction Management, and 1 staff member from Cultural Resources. And the legislative members, we oversee the task force. There is some new language on page 13 with the task force that we do provide oversight and recommendations to, or we provide advice and recommendations to the oversight group under this new statutory structure. Basically, the advisory committee oversees the day-to-day things, paint colors, furniture, major decisions and expenditures will go to the oversight group of the legislature. On page 14, we are just redelineating space in the Capitol building. This is an update. Currently, the state law says that the Legislative Service Office and the Management Council shall be in the Capitol, but it never once says the legislature shall actually meet here. So you'll see we've amended that. You also see that 413723. This is kind of an archaic law that says the state engineer shall have an office in this building. That is no longer the case, and so we're taking that out. Then in section 3 on page 15, this just continues the current members of the task force as we move forward, unless the Speaker of the House or President of the Senate decides for new members in the next by March 31st. Section 4, you'll see there is a total cost. It does come in at $259 million. I'd be happy to talk about any of the expenses. They should all be provided in the report of the full project. We currently do have about $105 million total saved up, and then we're appropriating $37.5 million each of the next 4 years for the total cost of the project. To allow us to fully contract with firms for the project, you'll see on page 16, line C, the state treasurer and auditor can utilize interfund loans from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund Reserve account to be sure we can contract for the life of the project. Page 17, there is $95,000 set aside for the advisory task force and the oversight group as we move forward. We've been having roughly about a meeting every week here leading up to the legislature. We should probably continue with about a meeting or two every month for the next 4 months. Section 5 and Section 6, we're actually taking the $4.4 million we set aside 2 years ago and putting it into the capital corpus account to proceed with level 3. You'll also see in Section 7 on page 18, we appropriated funding in 2003 for the renovation and repairs of the Capitol. There's $3 million left in that account, so we're transferring that $3 million into the corpus of the account. Section 8, we're authorizing two additional positions to go to A&I Construction Management over the next 4 years. Our Construction Management division is full, and to take on a project of this enormity, the Management Council felt it proper to add up to two limited positions for the next 4 years as this project conducts itself. Section 9 just says appropriations shall remain in effect until completed, and Section 10 says this happens immediately. I would be happy to answer any questions you have, refer you to the proper person as we move forward.
Chairman Harshman, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I inadvertently, there was a standing committee amendment, and it changed one word. And so I move the standing committee amendment and urge your adoption.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing amendment committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Burt, gotcha.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On my desk, I can't hold them up because it's a prop. I have a set of these books that I would like to ask each one of you to take time to at least thumb through it. So if you don't understand or know what the project's about, it's quite well documented in these four volumes. The only thing I ask is you keep them in the chamber so that we can kind of keep track of them. But on and for this, the Capitol definitely needs it. I've been sitting on this committee, and it's one of the most involved projects that we've done, and we've carefully used every dime and looked at every expenditure. There is no fluff in this budget. That we're not building a Taj Mahal. We are doing a renovation project that we can all be proud of in the future. So on and for the bill.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I too agree that we, you know, this is a project that needs to be done, but I wonder, my concern is the timing of it and whether or not we might be jumping the gun a little bit. And I guess to start off with, I refer to page 5, that, you know, I know it isn't appropriate to put into a bill, but I can't find in the information I've gotten how this is all going to connect together time-wise, because the Hersher office building has to be prepared in order to use it. And the last I saw with the way it's configured now, the space accommodations aren't sufficient until we build onto it, which building onto it is going to take some time. And again, I don't have a feeling for whether that's going to be ready in 2 years or not, or actually a year and a half, so that it can be done there. The other question concerns me on page 6. I see on starting about page on line 6, in small b there, shall allocate space between the within the Capitol building to meet legislative needs, needs of the governor's office, security needs, and then it drops it there, and it doesn't say anything about the constitutional officers, and I get the feeling that there's not much of a commitment on the part of the committee to assure that we're going to have maybe not all of each constitutional officer visible and available and placed in the Capitol, but it sure certainly seems to me that it should be. And then I become more worried when I get to page 7 that somebody has prioritized the state offices, which sounds to me that we could come up with an outcome if we pass this bill and just leave it up to this committee, that they might say, well, we have room enough for the Secretary of State, but we're going to put the state auditor somewhere else. We're going to put the state treasurer somewhere else, and so forth. You know, I think as a minimum, you need to, before you would pass this, we should have some commitment so that we're not voting on something, and then we come back here next year and we find out that there's a new preliminary report where one constitutional office is going to be left out of the Capitol and the other two is, you know, I want to know that before we start, voting and approving this. It seems like that's an important question to know. I had another issue here somewhere. I guess I'll stop with them right now, and I need to be convinced before I could support this, that these kind of things are going to be decided ahead of time, and we don't start voting yes and then end up with an outcome that is insufficient and does not take into account the necessity of having the constitutional offices that are in here now somehow be placed in here again. Thank you.
Speaker Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 103 and ask for your favorable consideration. It, on page 5, line 14, deletes a comma, and on page 12, line 9, changes the word which to whom.
Okay. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill. Any Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is along the lines of the speaker before him. How often do we appropriate a $259 blank check where we don't know what the end state's going to be? We don't know who's going to be in the building. We don't know how big the rooms are going to be. I've heard rumors committee rooms will be as big as room 302. I sat in on the briefing, which it even lists in the bill the dates of the briefing as given to legislators. However, I couldn't confirm or deny the room sizes, how many rooms we'd have. A lot of questions will not be able to be answered that day. We also asked the question, why can't we split up the Capitol and the Herschler reconstructions? And the response was, in order to meet the 100th anniversary of the Capitol, which I don't think that should be the driving force of our $259 million project, is just so we can meet the 100th anniversary. I think where there's larger concerns going forward in the next 100 years, what the building's going to be used for. Also, the question was asked, how much would it cost just to install the fire suppression system and build, make this building up to code? And the essentially what the architect said, it's all or nothing. You can't do that stuff piecemeal to this building. And my question to the bringer of the bill is, why can't that stuff be piecemealed? Why can't we separate the Herschler? Why can't we just fix the structure of this building? Why do we have to do $113 million or nothing to fix the building? Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I haven't been involved in this other than when it came to appropriations and then just the briefings that we all had an opportunity to sit through and the presentations down in the basement of the Herschler. I think it's important to realize really how this building's evolved. You know, this balcony used to go all the way around in this room. Back here in the behind the glass used to be typists and stenographers because all the amendments were just brought to them either handwritten or given to them orally, and every word had to be typed exactly right. Where the LSO is at now, just down the hall, that used to be the Supreme Court. It was a two-story up above. It was a two-story opening. If you look in a lot of the corner offices, I think there's one left. They all had fireplaces in them. And so the building's undergone tremendous. You know, I remember my first, these skylights were closed when I was first elected here and came here in 2003. And they were closed off and had fluorescent lights. You could see the lights behind the glass and how that's changed and brought this whole room back. There's been a lot of changes over the last 100 years, and I don't think many of us won't even be here when this session occurs or when this building gets done. In fact, in current trends, most of us won't be. There'll only be about 5-6 of you folks still sitting here. And so I think the thing to... I guess I'll push back a little bit and say that all 60 of us got to somehow be involved in making every decision on paint and this size of the room and where this goes and all that. You know, we do this part of the committee structure. That's how this whole legislature works. We don't all micromanage every construction project around the state. We assign these things to committees. We study it. We trust them. They come back with the plan and we vote it up or down. But, I would say leadership has done a great job, particularly the President of the Senate and the members from Cheyenne who are here. I mean, they've got the time to do it. None of it. We all live scattered across the state. These folks have put a lot of time, a lot of thought into this. You know, another part comes, too. We've got the Safeway site over here. I've been saying, why don't we just move over there? Well, they've studied all that. And, you know, putting portables up and doing all this stuff, that stuff's not free. And we're going to have to do something with the Herschler anyway. And do you want to do it now when we have some one-time money? I mean, we've got some one-time money now to do this. Or are we going to wait and try to take it out of the LSRA or do those kind of things? And so there's opportunities that we've been blessed to serve. This is one of those times when gas prices are up, our permanent funds have grown, and hopefully now we'll have some money to do this and not wait until we absolutely can't. Because, but at some point, we're going to have to do it. And I really applaud the folks, and particularly the members from Cheyenne, and many of them aren't members of this body anymore, and they've still volunteered to serve and as citizens to give their input and their work and dedicate a portion of their lives to doing this. So appreciate all the work, and going to give this a strong aye vote, and I encourage you to do as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Zwanzer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to answer some of those questions, this body and the body down the hall started talking about this in 1994. We're actually one of only 10 state capitals that have not undergone a major renovation. In our existence. We've had minor tweaks, the last one being in 1980. We started saving money for this project in 2003. So this isn't a flash in the pan. We've been planning on this day for about a decade now. We've raised over $100 million to start to answer the Good Chairman of Revenue's questions. It's a priority list, and we basically, through management council, since I'm not on there, said the legislature comes first. And after the legislature in this building, the governor should come second, and then security should come third. We don't even count the attorney general right now. That's what you saw in the bill. We know that we have about 89,000 square foot of need in this building. When we talk to the legislative branch and elected officials, 89,000 square feet of need, we only have about 51,000 square feet of space. After we bring this building to code with bathrooms, an elevator, et cetera, we only have 50,000 square feet of space to fit 90,000 square feet of need. We therefore know not everyone can stay in the building. Leadership, that's how we do it, the process. We've created this two committees, an advisory task force, and then leadership of both bodies of the legislature and the governor to make these decisions. This is certainly difficult decisions, right? We have the entire LSO staff who'd like to stay in this building, our elected officials. We didn't want to have a delineation of space before the legislative session came because you would all have different elected officials talking to you about 90 different plans that we could make for this building. And so we felt best to leave those decisions till after we approved the project. This is a level three design. We've done level one and level two. We don't have all the answers yet. We don't with other projects of this type. We're jumping on board for a level three to get these decisions. We don't know paint colors. We don't know space assignments. We do know what our need is. We know what size committee rooms we should have, about 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. Our appropriations committee should be about 1,500 square feet. We know the structural integrity of this building. We can't make all the committee rooms fit in this building. We do anticipate having three or four committee rooms where 302, 207, and the current intern financial segment of the building are. And so we know the numbers, we know the need, because we don't have exact figures on where everyone's going to go. We shouldn't have those before level three. And so we're asking for level three design money today. The 2017 year is the centennial of the last edition of the Capitol where we're sitting in this room today. It's a goal in mind. If we don't meet it, you know, so be it. But I think it's a lofty to have a goal that we can march to that keeps everybody going. It keeps our construction manager moving. It keeps A&I moving. And so if something were to come up next year and it's just impossible to meet that, certainly there's enough heads on this that we will have the fiduciary responsibility to not jump off a cliff without knowing all the answers. What this is here today is a step in the right direction to make sure we're going on level three. And if something were to happen next year before the renovation of the building, we could slow it down, but for the next year, when we only meet, you know, once a year, that's why there's a little bit more than usual in this bill. The other concern raised, we know we have to fix the Capitol. We've known that for 20 years, if not longer. When you start talking about fixing the Capitol, there's a whole lot of ground studies, pipe, what we call the central utility plant between the Hersher building and the Capitol that needs to be fixed, primarily for security. So once you're fixing the Capitol building and you have to go through and do all the work in the tunnel anyway, fixing the Herschler and getting it on the same track as the Capitol really isn't that much more expensive. We cost estimate the numbers. Building the four-story addition is only about $14 million with everything else. What our real concern is security. The central utility plant, that thing that steams up every day, you'll notice between the Herschler and the Capitol, it needs to be moved because it's a major security risk, not only for, you know, terrorists, but pretty much if you get an errant squirrel in there, it can shut down not only the Capitol, the Herschler, our Supreme Court, the Hathaway, and the Barrett, because they're all connected, for those of you who don't know, by that central utility plant, that thing that steams up all the time. We need to move that. And so once you start going through all the costs for the building, it just makes prudent fiscal sense to do the project at once, move the central utility plant, and get all five buildings in operation. There is a very strong step-by-step process. It starts with a Herschler expansion for the new building first, then space assignments. It's a six-step process. I know it's on one of these pages. I'd be happy to point that out to the Chairman of Revenue. There have been tens of thousands of hours collective thought on this, on how it's all going to work, and I would ask you to move it forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions in the interim next 2 days, happy to talk about amendments should anyone have them, but really a whole lot of work and study has gone on this, and I'd be happy to answer questions to that goal. Thank you.
Speaker Lucknow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Brothers and sisters, I urge you to move this bill along. We're coming to 10 years of culmination of thought and planning on this. This body, I think 4 years ago, provided a state office building and the budget to build a state office building directly behind this wall in the open lot. And the governor saw fit to line item veto that state office building, which would be built now, and we could move into that and then move here. We don't have that now. But what we have here, and I want you to look around this room, and I want you to think of all of the debates that occurred in here and the history that occurred here. And then I want you to think about the time bomb that this building is. When I moved into the majority floor leader's office, I wanted to put a little refrigerator in there. And I hauled the little refrigerator up and I sat it there. And A&I came running in and they said, oh, no, you can't have a refrigerator. It's too much wattage. You'll burn the building down. These desks were not contemplated for small fluorescent lights and portable computers. And we have to shut off other electrical systems in this building so that the wiring in this building doesn't get overloaded and burn the building down. You've seen the pipes in this building, the old cast iron pipes that need to be replaced, or else we're going to have a water leak. This building, they have to start heating it in November so that it's warm enough for us to come here for a January legislative session. You've seen the fire modeling. This building is a chimney. And those of you who've been up into the dome, you've seen all of the exposed wood up there. You've seen what a fire hazard this is. And the nature of fire is it starts low, it climbs high, it finds something that it can ignite, and then it falls down and burns down the whole building. The smoke in this building, without proper smoke, it's not just a matter of putting sprinklers in. You know, I mean, we could hang little red plastic pipes up above our heads and have the sprinklers we need, which would certainly be dignified for the building. But you need the smoke evacuation as well. And this building will fill with smoke and be a life hazard within 5 minutes of ignition of a fire. Now, we've been lucky, and we've dodged bullets for 100 years, but it's about time that we start addressing the needs and making a capital that fits the needs of the 21st century, not the 19th. And we have some real problems in this building. It's not handicapped accessible, although we've cobbled together some handicap accessibility. Our bathroom facilities for the public are awful. We have to slide a sliding thing on the door to let people know whether the unisex restroom is occupied. So just to meet code, we decreased the usable space from 61,000 square feet to 50,022 square feet. Well, we've got to operate a government, and we've got to have a place that we can be proud of to operate a government. We can either cobble together a solution and kick the can down the road, or we can remodel the Herschler building, which already has the foundation in place and the plans for remodeling, and make that a 30-year-old office building that's in need of renovation anyway, an office building to be proud of, connected to this facility, and have a capital complex, and make sure that we allocate the space efficiently. Now, there's going to be political battles between politicians. The one thing about politicians is they all have egos. And so we have 5 constitutional egos, 60 egos in here, and 90 egos down there. Or 30 egos. Well, they've got 90. They all have 3. And so there are going to have to be some choices made. Who better than to make the choices than this body? And we'll make the choices with discretion and with consideration for everybody. And we'll weigh things the best that we possibly can, because that's what we do. And so, brothers and sisters, I urge you to pass this bill on. If there are some amendments to the bill, make the amendments. But certainly don't kick this can down the road.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring perhaps a little different perspective. I wasn't here when they first built the Capitol, so don't give me that line. But I'd ask you to take a look at the floor, and you'll see 3 bass caps scattered across the floor. They're all over the floor here of the house. Those are all conduits that were put in 1972. They've never been used. Good planning. The purpose of those was to provide a sound system, to provide a tote board for voting, to make it a little bit different. The idea of the tote board wasn't just speed, as I always run into, but rather it was also for how we vote. We could have a voting system in which your light comes on when you're present, and everybody knows that you voted, but they don't know how you voted. And then when the chief clerk would close the board, that light stays on, but another light comes on and shows immediately then the total of how everybody voted. It's a different way to vote. Changes the attitude on the floor in the voting process. Good idea. Back in 1972, that was a good idea. It was available then. We haven't done it yet. I think of what happened then and what's happening now. I'm not in disagreement with the bill and the effort of establishing a priority, but the priority to me is the key. First is the safety of the building and its design that the good speaker has just talked to you about. But in addition to that, most of the deterioration, as I understand what the study has revealed, actually is in the core of the building. So if there's a deterioration problem relative to piping, the heating, and that, it's occurring in the central part. Now, the central part where the rotunda is and the immediate office around that, it is first priority, is because everything comes from that, the smoke, the fire, and that. And I think that's our priority of what we should establish first. If it's the flow of money that is involved, I really support that is the priority. I think the second priority is how the building is going to be used and what we think of it. I think the 5 elected officials probably are the first priority there relative to the office space and public impression of the building. But along with that comes the jeopardy of the chambers. And I love the chambers. I've been around. I've seen quite a few of the state capitals. This chamber is unique. It can be modernized in some fashions, but it doesn't have to be abandoned as they did in Nevada or Arizona or Florida, where they just took the, in Nevada, they made a museum out of the Senate chambers and the House chambers and built their own building and put the entire legislature in a building next to it. Pretty bold stuff for a conservative state like Nevada. We don't need to do that. We don't need to make that kind of an assumption. But I think what we really do need, and that I'd like to add to the thought that is here, not in disagreement, but rather an elaboration of the facilities that go with the legislature itself. They don't have to be in the Capitol. They don't have to have nice offices and that right here in the Capitol. They can have it adjoining, and I think the Hirschberg Building Extension is probably a pretty good idea, with the caveat that we have more 302 built offices or hearing rooms with staff and putting it in the same proximity of the hearing office, hearing rooms. My recommendation is three. And if we had three that were there, then the relationship of the committees and their function and their operation could be staffed and uncrowded and inviting to the public as well as the media. And I think those are the some considerations that we ought to have, and understanding that our permanent staff doesn't have to be in the central part of the Capitol building, can be in an adjoining if we use the hearing office complex correctly and with that design. I think that's a second priority that we ought to consider. And I don't see that priority with the explanation of the good member from Cheyenne. You guys have done a great job, in particular, trying to find out what are the real problems and how to address them. And I think that does that. You've done great. But the other part of it, the design for the future, you're talking about 100 years. I want you to take a look at the brass caps and see what 30 years of advanced planning failed to recognize, that those conduits are still there. I think the only thing that might be in there is a mouse or two that finds it convenient to run around. But with that, I'm on and for the building. I hope the priorities can be reestablished. Thank you.
Georgia Floor Leader Brown.
On and for the bill, Madam Chairman. Let me just add a couple more things. I think some of our committee rooms are an embarrassment. People are stuffed in there like sardines. It detracts from the dignity of this institution and what we're trying to do, and we really ought to have better. And most of us should be able to remember 302 before the last remodel, and it was an embarrassment. And it's still not much of a room when you get right down to it with the seating for the public. And the public, the people of the state, deserve better than that. I saw the square foot calculations that the architect did. I believe they're legitimate. I think the guy knows what he's doing. I think there's some room in there for us to do things. But you can't just sit here and say, well, this building somehow is big enough. When you do the square footage calculations, it's not. There are tremendous economies of scale to be realized from doing the whole thing at once. And when you look at his utility plan, his mechanical plan, his fire plan, I did a lot of fire when I was in the Navy, and the fire plan that he has for this building is unique, and it can't just be done piecemeal, and it makes a lot of sense. It's really cool if you understand, like the speaker said, if you understand how fires work and how they vent. The plan that he has for this is really unique, and it will work, but it in order to do all that, it all has to be done together, and without it, you lose economies of scale and probably double the cost of the whole thing in the end. One of the things I was impressed about with the Hirschberg building that he said that reflects on the whole thing is how much of that building is devoted to storage. And it was never built to be storage space, but there are tremendous areas in that are nothing but storage. And lastly, I would say, I don't think the new space that's going to be constructed in the Hirschberg building, he said he can heal the Hirschberg building. People don't like it over there. It's not a nice place to work. We have a representative here who used to work in the building who's given me a thumbs up with that. But he says he can heal it. And he says he can do the whole thing. And I believe when it's done according to his plan with the new office building, I don't think the new office building and the Hirschberg building are going to be considered to be substandard space.
And I'm not so sure when we're all done that anybody's going to want to be in the Capitol. I think maybe the opposite will occur, and they're all going to want to be over there, and the fight's going to be who has to stay over here. So the guy did his work. The stuff that they've done is very well put together. I'm in favor. I would urge you to vote in favor of this bill, and let's move forward.
Ooh. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 103 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File... Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Woo. You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on General File, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 15, recommended do pass. Senate File 26, recommended do pass. Senate File 27, recommended do pass. Senate File 50, Representative Lubnow announced a conflict of interest on Senate File number 50. Recommended do pass. Senate 54, recommended do pass. Senate File 70, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File number 9, recommended do pass. Senate File 29, recommended do pass. Senate File 103, amended, and further amended, recommended do pass. And it is,
Representative Hutchings.
Thank you. Representative Hutchings, signed by Representative Hutchings, Chairman.
Representative Hutchings.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations, Representative Hutchings. The report's been adopted. With that order of business of standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 61, engrossed veterans resident tuition provisions, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye. Representative Blickery, Burkhart, Escobar, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 71, Reversion of Appropriations, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Burkhart, Escobar, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 33, County Board of Equalization-2, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Laux, Madden, Nader, Northrup, Petroff, and Simlick, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Your committee number 2 on appropriations has reviewed Senate File 1 pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1, There is a following list that is provided for you, and it's signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
Pursuant to Joint Rule 14F, Senate File 1 is placed on third reading. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I think in your tray, try to distribute every piece of information that your Appropriations Committee has. So you should have two thick packets. One would be the Senate amendments. The other are the House amendments. Then you should have the Standing Committee report, which shows all the Senate amendments, second reading and third reading. It's just single space, Senate File 1, goes down all their amendments. That is the actual Standing Committee report that we will adopt here after a bit. And then two cheat sheets. And the process is, so there's two cheat sheets. One will say House position, the very top left, House position. And then the other says Senate position, ordered by identicals, related, and non-identicals. Okay, so find the Senate position. That's the one we're going to work off because that's the conference committee report. Divided these up at over our noon recess between the appropriations members, so we'll try to kind of quickly go through these, and then all the information's there, and we'll certainly, I just don't, some of you got to get to committee meetings and those kind of things, so I'll leave it really up to the floor to decide how long you want to do this, I guess. But the other thing I would say, as I left here Friday, and we were all pretty well smashed, I was thinking back on the previous week. Wednesday, we were all kind of a little frustrated with each other. And after second reading, and then Friday, it seemed like on this floor, and it's such a weird thing, I guess. The longer you do this, there's, you know, 60 independent thinkers, and we all have that kind of human contrarianism, I guess. We all kind of are doubting a little bit and wondering. And somehow I left here kind of exhausted, but just kind of humbled, thinking, man, this actually kind of works. The process works. And it's very hard. It was a semi-brutal week. We got frustrated with each other, but I think when we left Friday, we kind of thought somehow through this committee of the whole, we've got a process that we'll try to defend now and move to the next step. So really appreciate everybody's work in making the budget really a better document. Okay, so the first ones I'll take real quickly, and you can see on the Senate position ordered by identicals, related, and non-identicals, the first thing is just to explain the sheet. It says Senate Amendment Number across the top, on the top left. And you can see right under that is bold, it says Identicals. And so we'll hit those first. But then you can see the sponsor. And many of those folks were your partners in these identical type amendments. That means there was one in the House that was identical to it. And then you can see the mirror to the House number. The agency name, the program, and then whether it's general fund, federal fund, or other funds, the page of the budget, and what line, and then a short description. And so we'll just work off this cheat sheet here for the next bit. Okay, so the first identical was just the Department of Audit, and we moved $900,000, I think, from collection board into there, but we cut their budget, but we allowed them to bring it back as their standard budget. So that was identical. And then just the processes, all these things that are identical, that'll be, whenever the speaker points the conference committee, that'll be the first motion. We just move the identicals, and we adopt them, and they're off the table. So we voted on it, and the Senate voted on it, so it's a done deal. So if you're a partner to one of these mirror deals that was your issue, like senior citizens boards are on there, $480,000, it's a done deal. We're not going to talk about that anymore. That's done. You can text those people that you were working with to get that amendment and say it's over. It's a done deal, barring a governor's veto. Okay? And so those will not even be debated by the conference committee. Okay, Mr. Speaker. Then the second one there, S2007, State Parks and Cultural Resources, $25,000 for the state quarter, the 100-foot 25th anniversary. S2008 adds the select committee on a report from the school facilities department.
S2009, Wildlife Trust Projects, removed the footnotes which required public access to easements. Senate 2012, Aeronautics Division, allowed the reversion. I think it was $1.6 million that was going to revert, that carries over, and that allows that to carry over. Senate 2015, $480,000 for senior centers. Senate 2022, identical state aid, $5.3 million to community colleges. And that goes through the, did not alter, it'll go through course completion. Senate 2030, $125,000, moved from salaries from an administrator in the Department of Education to the Tribal Triad Initiative, and adds a footnote. And they took, And then Senate 2037, creation of maps, adds congressional references to the section. Senate 2038, AML funding. This allows AML dollars, it saves general fund actually to be used for, that were used for this manufacturer glass and glass products to be used for these rare earth materials in Wyoming, and it saved $250,000. Of general fund. S, Senate 2040, education accountability, adds a section that continuing the select committee on statewide education and provides a sunset date, and adds $35,000 of school foundation, that's S5, for the operation of that committee. S2042, UW Top Tier Science Programs and Facilities, adds a new section which creates a task force for the purpose of developing a plan to renovate and reconstruct the science labs and instructional areas at UW to improve the quality of instruction and research to achieve a top tier science program, a means to finance the plan and to provide a report. Senate 2043, UW proceeds from the sale of the Poplar Street facility in Casper. Senate 2047, the University of Wyoming allows $150,000 for the Tier 1 to be in the, to be made effective immediately. Senate 2048 is this veterinary biosafety lab, the Level 3 lab in Laramie, that allows into the state risk pool to be effective immediately to get that building fixed. Senate 2058, the Mixed Martial Arts Board, that allowing their expenditures to be expended in different times of the year when their needs are the greatest. That is an identical. And then Senate 3018, local government distributions moved to $40 million into the total, $175 million, distributed 60-40, so more money goes into the county consensus process. And evenly divided. Senate 3026, capital construction. And this is with adds a footnote, allows the colleges to expend any amount necessary. Next, I'll turn it over to the representative from Cheyenne. Flipping over to page 2 now, you'll see that Senate amendment number, and it says related. These are not identical, but they're related. Either we had it and defeated it or so on. So a good representative from Cheyenne.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this will help explain related with some minor changes, and these will all kind of start popping back into your mind as we go through it. If you recall at Senate 2001, this has to do with the governor's office and the tribal liaison. They changed a little bit of the language on the Senate side on defining what the deliverables are. But the House added in $200,000 back into the budget, and that was not added in by the Senate. Then going to 2003, this has to do with A&I and transportation. You'll recall we talked about whether or not the Capitol booth should be open during certain periods within Cheyenne Frontier days. We had them open it, but we did not fund it. And in this, on the Senate side, they did fund it to a tune of $5,000 coming from partly general fund, partly from DOT dollars. Then if you go to 2011, this has to do with aeronautics and transportation, and modifying footnote 14 increases the appropriation for air service enhancements by $500,000. So once again, this is what the Senate side did as opposed to what we did. And then if you go to Senate file, Senate Amendment 2014, this modifies footnote number 4, removing the requirements that grants are awarded to those entities providing the highest match and then the 1% minimum match. And so that's on the Senate side. Then let's go to 2016, the behavioral health. They deleted the footnote number 16, which allows payment to preschool providers to be reduced in the event that there is insufficient legislation. Remember, we had debates about that and what the proper funding was and whether there is enough funding or not. So the Senate side left the old language in, so it's different from our position. Then going down to the next one, 20117, once again, public health. This added the $125,000 of general funds to be expended on the Lifesaver program to rescue folks with certain disorders. That what came in on our side was not passed by the Senate. Going to 2024, Department of Tourism. The difference here is that we added in the Senate on the House side $600,000. The Senate added $960,000. And so the difference between the two houses is $360,000 on to the Department of Tourism. If you go to 2025, these are all technical corrections. One, if you go to the far right side of the document, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different technical corrections. No changes substantially in the bill. Those are just the typos and the problems that were located are misstatements or wrong words, like at the bottom one. It should have said Department of Administration of Information instead of Community Colleges. So those are really all simply technical corrections. And with that, I'll turn it over to Good Reverend Representative from Casper.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving on down the list, starting at Senate 2032, this was an amendment that we passed, moving appropriating $250,000 to continue the work of the Select Committee on Education Accountability. That failed on the Senate side. The next one, 2036, the Senate took out the retirement portion of the compensation package and took a like amount and added it in for salaries. So it was, we had a similar conversation on an amendment over on this side. The Senate passed that amendment. We did not. They also eliminated all the retirement for school K through 12 system. You will see at the very bottom, at the very end of this sheet, that was added back in into that salary component by another amendment. Under 2041, you'll remember we passed a couple amendments on school crisis management plans that failed on the Senate side. 2046, there was the footnote that provided enrollment incentives, and it also provided a penalty if UW did not meet those incentives. We peeled out punishment or the penalty portion of it and left in the incentive. The Senate peeled off the entire footnote, so there was no penalty, no incentives for enrollment. That's also reflected in the next one, 3011, on the top of your next page. They took the $2,500,000 that was in the budget to fund that incentive, and they took it out of the budget and then reappropriated it as an endowment match to the university for literacy projects. 2049 and 3030, these are among the biggest differences we have with the Senate, but we adopted an early childhood program amendment. They defeated a similar proposal on their side. And then remember we did on third reading, we did a pretty comprehensive amendment that brought in a number of economic development initiatives under the governor's office under one amendment with funding for those. The Senate did the same thing, but they did. It took them two amendments to do what we did in one. And so those, but those positions are essentially the same between the Senate and the House on that particular issue. And I will go ahead and turn over further explanation to the representative from Carbon County.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Remember, we're on the related amendments. Senate 2051, the net impact of all of that is that the House and Senate have the same position with those. 3005, this was originally deleted by the JC. The Senate add back in, and the House didn't, and that adds $330,000 and a footnote establishing the adjunct professor loan repayment program. 3006, excuse me, both deleted language in section 328. The Senate took out $3 million, put $3 million back into the general fund, and this relates to a building that's, or I'm sorry, a bill that is in progress. If the bill dies, it specifies how it's directed. 3009 modifies language in footnote 4, adds a new subsection requiring the governor approve projects before they're submitted to the Business Ready Communities program. It looks different, but really it's just looks. The House and Senate are pretty much at the same position on this one. 3016, this involves the SIP account. The Senate wanted $90 million, the House wanted $140 million, and that's the main difference with that one. 3017 adds a new subsection allowing state auditor to carry over $160,000 general fund for analysis of enterprise source planning. The House passed it, the Senate did not. 3020 adds a new section for purpose of appropriating $20 million general fund to the endowment challenge accounts. Of that, $10 million goes to UW and $10 million goes to the community colleges with the exception of Eastern Wyoming College. That passed the Senate. The House, we did not pass that except for $5 million. So that's one of the big accounts that there's a tremendous difference between the House and the Senate's position on the same issue. 3029, the Senate added $1 million in footnotes for continued development and implementation of statewide health information exchange. The House did not add that. And with that, I will turn it over to the good representative from Cheyenne.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Continuing on with top of page 4, this is Amendment 3031, Department of Health, Behavioral Health Program, dealing with that double billing issue we had. These are pretty much identical. It was dealing with the Social Security numbers that were to be provided to healthcare providers and identifying information there. So that is somewhat similar. 3032, the TANF funding. The footnote was removed for the father factor, but it didn't change the TANF funding any. 3033, the Senate failed this one, but the House passed this where we allocated the $1 million of AML money to be directed to the College of Arts and Sciences. And then 3034, the Senate failed this. The House passed this amendment for the Medicaid expansion waiver. Now we start the non-identicals. It's Senate 2005. This is the paperless information carryover money. They've been holding this money in ANI since 2009. This basically is telling them to get on with it and report back to us for this conversion. 2013, it's Department of Transportation. It's for a cost-benefit analysis for the usage of the state airplanes. 2026, University of Wyoming state aid. This is basically removing the funding for the Wi-Fi over there on the campus. 2028, the retirement system. It's just authority only that they can spend up to $225,000 for that position. 2029 and 2054, investment-ready communities. This one, the second one, actually, if you look at that bold print down there, it failed to delete the 2029 amendment. So probably what's going to happen is in conference committee we'll deal with the language then so it takes care of the second amendment. The 2039 amendment deals with municipal solid waste, cease and transfer loan grant program. We can use this money in the priority list, basically with the passage of Senate File 43. 2045, state lands, modifies that footnote by directing the department to study a best use of the fiber optic lines that's owned by the state. And in 2052, the Senate added some more language about where this task force will meet. And basically, I guess they said that they're going to meet in every city where there's a facility. The House said there were going to be three meetings, so there'll probably be some discussion about changing that language in conference committee too. And I'll turn this over to the good representative from our university town.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2059, Workforce Services affects the workman's comp program. It basically adds a footnote directing the department to implement the recommendation, the trial within the workers' comp program on alternative treatments to back and spine injuries. Senate File 3001. Actually, it's a timing issue. This was originally in the budget, but due to the Office of Surface Mining, related to the grant funds, they anticipate the funds not being available till April 1st of 2015, or even possibly July 1st of 2015. So they've diverted that money to other programs. Don't be alarmed, Gillette Madison folks. You're still getting your money. It's just they're just having to fund it basically in a different way, but it doesn't defund anything. And if you have any more questions, I do have a paper that explains this at length. Okay, 3002, the agency, the health, and it just adds a footnote directing the department to conduct a study to define the impact of independent hospitals. You recall we had quite a discussion about some of the hospitals and how they're affected with health care. And 3004, health department again. Modifies the footnote 10, changing the date from 2009 to 2013-14. If you recall, we had quite a discussion about how far back they had to go to justify or review their maintenance of effort. That just changes it from 2009 to 2013-14. Then on 3007, state lands, mineral royalty grants, this modifies the footnote number 5, deleting the provision for the corridor beautification. If you recall, we had quite a discussion about that as well. And with that, I would turn the explanations over to the good representative from Campbell County.
Representative Blickery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 3008 is just moving some funds within the University of Wyoming's money, and it moves 8,000 general fund from state aid line to a new line, Tier 1 Engineering. And then it adds a footnote that requires the university to not reduce its internal support and to maintain that internal support through 2017-2018. 3010 refers to the Business Council Investment Ready Committee, and it's essentially a footnote specifying that the Attorney General will review the grant applications before these grants are considered, as well as in doing final approval, and it's to be sure that they're constitutional early before a lot of work is done. The next one is the UW Medical, the WAMI program, And it's about reviewing the curriculum changes. Essentially, the University of Washington requires one less year on campus, and this footnote directs our university to conduct a review of these changes to make sure they fit the curriculum that's wanted by our state. 3014 is in education in the school foundation program, and it removes the second year 1%. This is a major change. It removes $8,260,000 for the second year of the external cost adjustment. And then 3027 removes from retirement and salaries $12 million and retirement contributions and adds it to salary. So those are some major things that we'll be working out.
Any questions on the conference committee report? Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move the adoption of the conference committee report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Pursuant to rule, Joint Rule 14.1G, Senate file number 1 is referred to a joint conference committee. With that, order of business of committee announcements. Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess. The bills that we will consider are Senate File 21, Engrossed, Insurance Own Risk Solvency Model Act, Senate File 57, Engrossed, Reduction of Boards and Commissions, and Senate File 74, Unemployment Insurance Coverage Fiduciaries.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment today in H-10 for consideration of Senate File 13, Senate File 55, and Senate File 92.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1 will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., to take up Senate File 28, Engrossed, Post-Conviction, Actual Innocence, and Senate File 84, Child Support Payment.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday, February 25th at 9:30 a.m. to hear Senate File 82, 2014 Large Project Funding.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet today, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H-17, where we will hear Senate File 64, Public Health Nursing, Senate File 76, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct, and Senate File 81, Employer Access to Social Media Accounts.
Chairman Simlock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet Tuesday, February 25th at 7 a.m. in room H-11 to hear the following bill, Senate File 66, Engrossed, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, Senate File 6, Engrossed, Groundwater Contested Cases, Senate File 56, State Engineer Fees, Senate File 7, Engrossed, Brucellosis Surveillance, and Senate File 42, Engrossed, Electrical Licensing Installation of Light Bulbs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until tomorrow, February 25, at 10 o'clock a.m.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is adjourned until tomorrow, February 25, 2014, at 10 a.m.